to turn to the book of Matthew, chapter 27. Book of Matthew, chapter 27. We'll read verses 33 through verse 50. When they were come unto a place called Golgotha, that is to say, a place of a skull, they gave him vinegar to drink, mingled with gall. When he had tasted thereof, he would not drink. And they crucified him, parted his garments, casting lots, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophet, they parted my garments among them, and upon my vesture did they cast lots. And sitting down, they watched him there, set up over his head his accusation written, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Then were there two thieves crucified with him, one on the right hand and another on the left. They that passed by reviled him, wagging their heads, and saying, "Thou that destroyest the temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself. Thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross." Likewise also the chief priests, mocking him with the scribes and elders, said, "He saved others. Himself he cannot save. If he be the King of Israel, let him now come down from the cross, and we will believe him. He trusted in God, let him deliver him now, if he will have him. For he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" The thieves also which were crucified with him cast the same in his teeth. Now from the sixth hour there was darkness over all the land unto the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani?" That is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" Some of them that stood there, when they heard that, said, "This man calleth for Elias." And straightway one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar and put it on a reed and gave him to drink. The rest said, let us see whether Elias will come to save him." Jesus, when he had cried again with a loud voice, yielded up the ghost. You want to take the central thought of the message from verse 33. "And when they were come unto a place called Golgotha," that'll be our subject, a place called Golgotha. We want to consider four main points. We want to consider the place called Golgotha. Secondly, we want to see that Jesus was brought to this place called Golgotha. Thirdly, we want to consider what transpired at the place called Golgotha. And fourthly, we want to see why Jesus went to the place called Golgotha. But first of all, consider that place. A place called Golgotha. That is to say, a place of a skull. Mark records, "And they bring him unto the place of Golgotha," which is being interpreted the place of a skull. John said, "And he," that is Simon, "bearing his cross, went forth unto a place called Golgotha." Luke records, "And when they were come to the place which is called Calvary." Calvary is Latin for Golgotha. So all four gospel writers record that Jesus came to this place of Golgotha. Golgotha was probably a small hill. And we know from Hebrews 13 and verse 12 that it was outside of the walls of Jerusalem. We gather, notice in John chapter 19, John chapter 19, verse 41 and 42. Now in the place, Golgotha, where he was crucified, there was a garden. And in the garden, a new sepulcher, wherein was never man yet laid. There laid they Jesus, therefore, because of the Jews' preparation day, for the sepulcher was nigh at hand. So from John's words, we gather that there was a burial ground very, very, very nearby Golgotha. Golgotha was the place where the Romans put guilty criminals to death by execution. It was the place where guilty criminals would meet their gruesome fate. So Golgotha was a place where the demands of the law were carried out. It was a place where the consequences of a broken law were met. So Golgotha was a place of punishment. It was a designated place of suffering, a designated place of torture. Golgotha was a place of misery, a place of great distress, a place of great sorrow, a place of heartache. It was a place of execution. Golgotha was the very place of condemnation, curse, and death. Golgotha always meant a sure and agonizing death. I mean, if you were being led to Golgotha, you were going to die. You weren't going to escape. Not only were you going to die, you were going to die an agonizing death. Golgotha was a very gruesome place. Golgotha was a place of great humiliation. People at Golgotha did not die in dignity. People at Golgotha died in humility. Golgotha was a place of indignity, place of disgrace. Families were disgraced by their loved ones dying at Golgotha or being put to death at Golgotha. Golgotha, of course, was a place of dread. You didn't want to go there. It was a place of fear, a place of absolute horror. Golgotha was a very dreadful place. What a horrid, appalling, and abominable place that Golgotha was. And thousands of times, The Romans would parade individuals out of the city to this place called Golgotha. And all the anathema of all who were brought to this place. A place called Golgotha. Think about all the stories that could be told about this place called Golgotha. But the greatest, the most amazing, and the most memorable story that can ever be told about this place is the day that Jesus came unto a place called Golgotha. Secondly, consider that Jesus was brought to this place called Golgotha. I believe that Jesus left the glories, the splendor, the riches of heaven to specifically go to this place called Golgotha. I believe that every moment of his earthly life, from conception to his arrest and trial, was designed by God to bring him to this place called Golgotha. Think of all the times Jesus passed by that place, knowing full well that he would go there. Jesus, who is God in a fleshly body, Jesus, the Holy One, Jesus, the Pure One, the Perfect One, he who is without spot, he who is without blemish, he who is undefiled, without any fault, without any sin, he who is the perfectly impeccable one, is brought to this place called Golgotha. History tells us that it was a place marked with skulls and bones from the public executions of the guilty and the ungodly. And Jesus, the innocent one, is brought to this place called Golgotha, the very place where the most filthy of men have been brought. The very place where the most wicked, the most vile, and the most foul, and the most repulsive of men have been brought to face the final consequence, or to face the consequences of their sin. And now Jesus, the innocent one, the pure one, is brought to this disgusting, impure place called Golgotha. Jesus, the one who spent his earthly life doing nothing but good, spent his earthly life healing the sick, giving sight to the blind, giving hearing to the deaf, and strength to the crippled, and cleansing to the defiled, and liberty to those who had been possessed with demons, and even life to the dead. Jesus is brought to the place called Golgotha. Jesus, the one who during his earthly ministry brought more cheer, encouragement, and hope and relief than anyone who's ever lived, is brought to this place called Golgotha. The very place where the most violent of men have been brought. The very place where the most dishonest of men have been brought. Jesus, the most remarkable of men, is brought to the place where innumerable thieves have been brought to die. Where innumerable murderers and traitors have been brought to die. Jesus Christ, the benevolent one, is brought to a place identified with violence. We need to stop there. We need to stop at those words, and they when they would come into a place called Golgotha. We need to just stop there and behold Jesus at Golgotha. See Him there. Meditate upon that. Jesus, the innocent one, the pure one, brought to the place where the most vile of men have been brought to be treated as the most vile of men have been treated. Thirdly, we want to consider what transpired at this place called Golgotha. We're not going to go into detail. But just prior to coming to this place called Golgotha, Jesus has been beaten. His face is more marred than the face of any man. The flesh of His back has been torn to shreds by the scourging. And the muscles and tissues His back have been lacerated by that scourging. And on the way to this place called Golgotha, no doubt thousands had traveled that way before. But this day would be far different. The one who is being led to this place called Golgotha, He is so different than all those who had ever walked that road before. The people are so anxious to crucify Jesus that they force a man by the name of Simon to carry the cross upon which Jesus would be crucified. So there is Simon carrying this cross. And then we read, and when they were come unto the place called Golgotha, when they were come to that place, they gave him vinegar and drink mingled with gall. This was a narcotic mixture. It had a twofold purpose. For the condemned, it was for the condemned man's comfort. But I don't believe that was the main purpose. The other purpose was for the soldiers' convenience. They would give this narcotic to the one who had been condemned to die, to make them almost lifeless, to I don't care drug, so he wouldn't have to fight and struggle with the one who was being condemned. But it was a narcotic mixture. And when Jesus was offered this mind-numbing drink, he refuses. We read he would not drink. The reason he is in this place called Golgotha is to suffer the full measure of punishment for the redemption of his people. And he would do nothing to deaden the pain. He was in this place called Golgotha to do the work of God. And he would not allow his mind, not even for a moment, to be incapacitated for the work that he was about to do. We read in verse 35, following the offer of this drink, and they crucified him. There's quite a gap between verse 34 and verse 35. But if you look at Mark and Luke's and John's account, you see the same gap. All we read is, and they crucified him. So what happened between that gap in verse 34 and 35? Well, the unconcerned soldiers, when it would go on to the next step from verse 34, which was what? The nailing of the individual to the cross. And planting that cross in the ground. Between verses 34 and 35, the cross was laid upon the ground. Jesus was thrown to the ground on his back and nailed to that cross. None of the gospel writers record it. They simply say, and he was crucified. It's as if they all simply say, turn away your eyes for a minute. No one needs to see what is about to happen. The next picture we get is Jesus hanging on that cross. And as we look, there are three crosses. Facing these crosses, there is a cross on the left. And upon that cross is a criminal. And above his cross it reads, thief. Thief. That was his crime. There was another cross on the right. And on that cross, there was a criminal. And the inscription again would read, thief. So you look to the left, you look to the right, you see two crosses. Upon those crosses were men who were guilty of crimes. Because, or between these two crosses, there's another cross. A great crowd has gathered, and everyone's attention is focused upon that middle cross. Focused upon the one who is upon that middle cross. And certainly this one on that middle cross is far, far more despised, far more hated than those two thieves. He has been far more shunned than the two rotten thieves on either side. The one upon that center cross, he's more mocked than the other two. He's more taunted. He's more ridiculed than the good-for-nothing thieves upon the other two crosses. If you were observing this on that day, you would not help but notice that the one upon that center cross, there is far more scorn shown toward him. Far more disrespect. Far more disgust and hostility and animosity than the two selfish thieves on either side. The one upon that center cross, without a doubt, was considered by the multitude to be far, far worse than the two thieves. Far more intolerable than the two thieves. Notice verse 35. And they crucified him. They parted his garments, casting lots. Verse 39, they that passed by. So there were individuals that day who just passed by. And as they passed by, they reviled him. Not the other two thieves. They reviled him. The one on that center cross. And they went by just shaking their heads. Perhaps in disgust. Perhaps in disbelief. But their attention was upon that center cross. Verse 40. They not only shook their heads, they said, if thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross. And perhaps as they said that, they would stop and wait and see if he was going to come down. And he did not. They continued on their way, just shaking their heads. Verse 40. Likewise also the chief priests, the religious leaders of the day, mocking him, not the two thieves, but all attention was upon that center cross. The scribes and the elders said, he saved others. Oh, how true. You could bring forward an innumerable multitude to testify. He saved me. But they're mocking. And they said he saved others. Himself, he cannot save. Now they meant that as ridicule, but it's true. He couldn't save himself. And you and I ought to be glad that he couldn't. He saved others. Himself, he cannot say. If, doubt, he be the King of Israel, let him now come down from the cross. And we will believe him. He trusted God. Let him deliver him now, if he'll have him. If he'll have him. And then we read, so we have those who are passing by. We have the chief priests. We have the scribes. We have a whole multitude of people who sat there and watched him and mocked him. And then we read the thieves also. They were mocking in the same way. So not only those who were sitting there and those who were standing there and those who were passing by showed their utter disdain for the one who's on that center cross, but the very thieves. The very thieves upon those other two crosses. They're saying the same thing. The one upon that center cross. I believe that he has more bruises than the thieves do. His body is far more mangled than the two thieves. And it's very obvious that his suffering is much more intense than the suffering of those two thieves. So who is this upon the center cross? Well, according to verse 37, the inscription upon that cross reads, "This is Jesus." This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. The inscription does not read thief, because he never stole. It does not read murderer. On the other two crosses, you do not have the thief's name. All you have is a crime. But on this center cross, this is Jesus, the King of the Jews. The inscription, again, has his name. The very one that the Lord said, "Thou shalt call his name Jesus, for he shall save his people from their sins." The one upon that center cross is Jesus. He has broken no law, yet he is despised, he is rejected, he is stricken. He is smitten. He is afflicted. He is wounded. He is bruised. He is chastised. And he is in travail of soul. According to Isaiah 53. This leads us to the question and to our fourth point. Why? Why is Jesus in this place where criminals, where the guilty, where the vile are put to death? Why is he in this place? Why is he upon that center cross in this place called Golgotha? He has committed no sin. He has never wronged any man. He has never wronged any woman. He has never wronged any child. But there he is, a place of criminals. He is absolutely perfect. Why? Why is he in this place called Golgotha? May I say, first of all, he is there voluntarily. People didn't go to Golgotha voluntarily. He is there voluntarily. Voluntarily. He is in this place of punishment. He is in this place of suffering and torture and misery and sorrow and humility and indignity and disgrace and condemnation. He is there voluntarily and willingly. You know what that means? It means this. He is there because He wants to be. Because He wants to be. Again, people did not go to Golgotha because they wanted to. This one named Jesus, He's there because He wanted to. He has done no wrong. Yet He is dying the death of a criminal. He is not only dying the death of a criminal. He is being treated as if He were the most degenerate criminal that ever lived. Why is this one named Jesus at this place called Golgotha? Why is He in this place? Why has He gone there willingly and voluntarily? This place of suffering and anguish. He is there because He loves others. He is there in the place. He is there in the stead of others. He is at this place called Golgotha for me. Though Jesus has no sin, though He is not broken or violated the law of God, there He is. In a place called Golgotha. An awful place. An awful place of suffering and torture. A place of punishment. A place where criminals met justice. And there He is. Dying the death. Dying the death of a criminal. And He's doing so for me. He's doing so in my place. So there in this place called Golgotha, He's dying upon a cross. Why? Because He took upon Himself every one of my sins. He took upon Himself all the vileness and all the filth of every one of my sins. He took upon Himself all the guilt of my sins. And He took upon Himself all the debt of my sin. The entire load was upon Him. And then He voluntarily and willingly went to this place called Golgotha. And there He was charged with the debt of my sin. There He was held accountable for my sins. God, looking down upon Him, upon His Son, spared not his son. At a place called Golgotha, God poured his wrath upon his son. Why? Because my sin was upon him. He would go voluntarily and willingly and on purpose to a place called Golgotha. For me, in my place and in my stead. And for me, in my place and in my stead, because he is bearing my sin, he was made a curse. And he endured unimaginable distress and pain and misery and sorrow and anguish and torment in my place. So you see, Jesus went to a place called Golgotha. He went there for me. He went there in my place. He went there in my stead. While he was there, something happened that never happened before. There was a darkness that came over the world. And there at that place called Golgotha, he endured a deep and thick darkness, an excruciating darkness. He did so on purpose. He did so out of love. He was forsaken. God left him. He was forsaken of God. So as I look upon that central cross, in that place called Golgotha, I read by faith, and the inscription says, this is Jesus, and he is here out of love, and in the place instead and bearing the curse of the sins of Dan Gordon. In a place called Golgotha. This ought to fill our hearts, you and I that know the Lord, with assurance. As we follow Jesus to this place called Golgotha. And when we stop and consider that Jesus went to this place called Golgotha, how can that not fill your heart with a love for him? How can that not fill you with zeal for him? How can that not fill you with determination and passion for his service? When we see Jesus in this place called Golgotha, and he's there bearing my sin in my place, in my stead, how can we be indifferent? How can we be apathetic toward the cause of Christ? How can we be untouched? How can we be unfeeling? How can we even for a moment be detached from him? Oh, how we ought to lift our hearts When we read those words, place called Golgotha, that ought to fill our hearts with gratitude. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord, for going to that place called Golgotha for me. Oh, how that ought to fill us with praise. Oh, we viewed that place called Golgotha quite differently than the world. I don't view it as a tragic place. Yes, it's a horrible place. But it's a wonderful place. Because it was there Jesus paid my sin debt. The truth is, there is no gospel. There is no salvation without Jesus going to this place called Golgotha. Every now and then we need to take a trip to Golgotha. In our minds and in our hearts. And again, you can just read those words. They brought him to a place called Golgotha. And you can just stop there and meditate on that for a day. But we need to go there. We need to go there. We don't need to stay there. Because we know he was put in a grave. And he came out of that grave. But we do need to go there. We need to go there and visit every now and then. Jesus went to a place called Golgotha. He went willingly. And he went in a way that no one else ever went. There was no fear. There was no resistance. He went willingly to this place called Golgotha. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us.